This is Allison Carter with the Milestones Podcast. This is episode 27. And on this episode, I'm going to talk about sensory processing as it relates to sleeping. For any parent of infants, toddlers, or young children, sleep is a big deal, not only for the child's benefit, but for the parent and the rest of the family as well. When you have a child who has difficulty sleeping due to sensory processing issues, it can and usually does affect the whole family. We all need to get our sleep in order to feel our best for the next day and to be able to get through the day without nodding off. For parents of kids who have sensory issues, this can be a real challenge. It's one thing to not get a good full night of sleep once in a while. Most of us can handle that because we can recover the next night. However, for those kids who have issues with sleeping, it is a nightly occurrence for them and for their parents. So there is never really any time to recover from not getting enough sleep. There are limited published research studies on the topic of sensory processing as it relates to sleep patterns. I did find one study published in the American Journal of Occupational Therapy in May of 2015. I do not have a copy of the full study, so if anyone listening has access to the full article, please let me know. You can email it to me at allison@mymidwesttherapy.com, and I will share it with everyone else that's listening as well. The article is called Sensory Processing and Sleep in Typically Developing Infants and Toddlers. The researchers claim to have found a small but significant correlation between increased seeking and shorter daytime sleeping duration. And they've also found an increased sensitivity and longer time to settle to sleep. This was based on chart reviews of 177 infants and toddlers and data from the infant toddler sensory profile and brief infant sleep questionnaire, which are both forms that parents or caregivers can use to complete. According to their study, more than half of the participants demonstrated a pattern of increased sensory processing in one or more areas, and the sensitivity quadrant was the most common. What I have been able to take away from this article is that infants and toddlers that are sensory seekers do not take very long naps. I don't have more details than this, unfortunately, so I can't tell you which area or areas they are seeking more sensory stimulation. My guess would be vestibular or proprioception for the most part, though. The other finding was that those kids who had higher sensitivity took longer to settle to get to sleep. Again, I take this to mean that it takes them longer to calm down, to be ready, and then to fall asleep than other babies. Due to their heightened sensitivity, although, in which areas, I don't know. I would love to have this full article so I could get that information in detail. I use the infant toddler sensory profile in my practice as well. It is a really helpful tool and easy to use. Once parents fill out the form, it's a pretty simple questionnaire. Then an occupational therapist can score it and go from there. Once you figure out which areas of sensory processing the infant or toddler is having the most difficulty with, you can use that information to help figure out why they may not be sleeping well. Many kids with sensory issues have a difficult time with falling asleep in the first place. Sometimes it can take an hour or longer for kids to finally fall asleep. In this situation, I'm not talking about a child who was just avoiding sleep because they wanted to stay up and play longer. This is a child who literally cannot calm their body from the inside in order to fall asleep. For example, if a child needs more vestibular stimulation, where you see them seeking out movement activities like swinging, spinning, jumping, and so on during the day, you can guess that they may need more of these activities at nighttime in order to be able to fall asleep as well. When I tell parents this, they often look at me like I'm crazy. However, I have seen it work in many kids. It's not a guarantee, but it's something to consider. What the parents do is make the movement activities part of their bedtime routine. Think about your current routine. For many families, it involves taking a bath, putting jammies on, brushing teeth, and settling down by reading a book. This is a nice routine for many people. However, when you have a child with sensory needs, it may not be getting the job done. We have to think outside the box on this one. So, while all of those things are nice things to do, and you can still do all of them if you want to, but I would add about 20 minutes of intense movement activities in there, probably right before reading the book time. For kids who need extra movement in order to feel calm, sitting and reading a book does not meet that criteria. They will likely need to actually move. It seems very counteractive to people to get kids up and moving around before you want them to go to sleep. But if you think of it from a sensory point of view, it may be exactly what they need. If you haven't listened to my episode on vestibular sensory processing, please go back and listen to that or review it if needed to get the full background on the benefits of movement for kids who need it. Basically, it involves getting their head moving through space and changing directions to stimulate this area of sensory processing. This is not, we're going to wear them out and they're going to be tired. This is getting the sensory need met. This means things like swinging, jumping, rolling, wheelbarrow walking, stop and go movements that stimulate their body and specifically their head. I almost always like to pair some proprioceptive activities here as well. These are things that provide deep pressure on their body, like squeezes, tickling, smashing them between pillows, rolling them up in a blanket, and things like that. This can also have a calming effect for many kids with sensory issues. There is some information out there that says that kids will need 20 minutes of these movement activities in order to reach the level where they have finally had enough stimulation and they will feel the effects, which means their body will feel just right. This is the place we want them to be so they can now get to sleep. If you do only 15 minutes of activities, you will get them revved up, but may not reach their full level. So now what you've done is just amp them up even more than they were before, but not gotten them to the place where they are feeling calm. These are often the parents that come back to me and say, "We tried doing some movement activities, but it just seemed to make it worse." Well, that would be true in this situation. If you don't do the full amount of time, you will make it worse. Although there are kids who may not need the full 20 minutes, that is something you will have to figure out by trial and error. I'm also not saying this strategy will work for all kids with vestibular sensory issues. There is not one magic strategy for all kids. Unfortunately, for all of those parents out there trying to help their kids just get a full night of sleep. Sometimes just getting kids with sensory issues to fall asleep at the beginning of the night is only the first step. The second step is often keeping them asleep throughout the night. For many kids who have trouble falling asleep in the first place, they also have trouble staying asleep for more than several hours at a time. When this is going on with a newborn, it would be age appropriate as they are waking to eat during the night and that is expected. However, when the child is 2 and 3 years old, they really need to get a full 10 to 12 hours of straight sleep at night. This is still a very important time for brain development and overall child development. If they are not getting enough uninterrupted sleep, it will also likely interfere with their ability to learn and process new information the next day, or each day in this case. Getting uninterrupted sleep is not only important for their brain development, but also for the rest of the family's overall sense of well-being. Parents and siblings who do not have sensory processing issues may be awakened during the night if the child with sensory issues wakes up and starts playing or making other sounds. This can be especially difficult for siblings who might have to share a room. To people who have never experienced this, you might be saying they could just put the child in their room and eventually they will fall asleep. I will tell you that when you have a child with sensory issues, it is not that simple. They're not doing this on purpose to try and mess with their parents. They're literally unable to shut their body down. If they finally end up shutting down, then it often doesn't last long and they're back up again in a couple of hours as if they've just awakened from a long night's sleep. It is pretty amazing how this happens, and parents are often up trying to keep the child quiet so they don't wake the rest of the family, and trying to figure out how to get them back to sleep again when it seems as though they are now wide awake with only 2 or 3 hours of sleep under their belt. In addition to trying the vestibular movement activities before bedtime, you can try hitting on some of the other senses to help here as well. For example, as I already touched on, proprioceptive strategies might be helpful. In this case, not during the pre-bedtime routine with the movement stuff necessarily, but while they are in bed. Some people use weighted blankets for this to give deep pressure on their whole body. This can be very calming for some people. I haven't been able to find conclusive evidence that this is effective for sleep, per se, but many people use them anyway, and they say they see a difference. This is one area I am very careful about, though, as the recommendations vary on the safety and the use of weighted blankets. They are actually not recommended for children under the age of 3, but I think this is mainly because they can be a choking hazard if the pellets from inside the blanket come out. And some kids chew on the blankets, so that would not be safe. They are not to be used with infants or any person who is unable to remove it from their own body. You should not wrap kids up in them either. If you are considering trying one, I would definitely consult with an occupational therapist who knows your child or who can evaluate your child and determine if they agree that it would be appropriate. At the very least, you could try using it during the time when you are sitting and reading the book with them prior to bedtime so that you can supervise and make sure it is not restricting their breathing or anything like that. Then remove it from their room when they get into bed. Other considerations for proprioception, and I've mentioned this before, is making or buying a Lycra fitted sheet that fits on their mattress over their regular sheets. The idea is similar to a Lycra body sock, which is another good sensory activity for daytime use, by the way. But the sheet that goes on their bed can provide some constant deep pressure on their body. It is not weighted, so it won't be heavy, and you don't have to worry about that restriction. Some people use vibrating pillows for kids to get another type of deep pressure calming input for sleep. I will have these items posted on my show notes and on my website today in case you want to reference what I'm talking about. You can find them on my website at mymidwesttherapy.com. You can also try auditory strategies like white noise machines or other music sounds like water sounds, bird singing, or even classical music. These things are also trial and error as to what might be calming for each individual child. They make those things that go on cribs for infants, like the fish aquarium toy that makes sounds or plays music and lights up as well. There is something called a dream pad that some kids use. It is a pillow that plays music. These things are quite pricey, and I don't actually know anyone personally who has used one. They are made with ILS, which is the Integrated Listening Systems technology. If anyone has heard of them, they have developed a listening program, which can be helpful for people with sensory processing issues as well. For visual stimulation, they have some newer types of things, like the pillow pets for kids that light up when you push the button. The lights stay on for about 20 minutes and are safe for kids to have on their own, and it may give them enough visual stimulation that they can lay in their bed and watch the lights long enough to feel calm and fall asleep. The other side of this is that some kids are very sensitive to any light and are unable to fall or stay asleep if there is a light in the room. This could include any light coming from the window as well. Room darkening curtains might help with this, or somehow blocking the window to make the room darker. Some kids with tactile sensitivity can be irritated by the material of the sheets or the pajamas they're wearing. Some kids actually sleep better when they're not wearing pajamas because the feeling of the clothing material is so irritating to their sensory system that it literally keeps them awake. If your child has sensitivities to touch or tactile issues, you might want to try using a lotion massage after their bath as part of the nighttime routine. When you apply the lotion to their arms and legs, just give a little extra pressure than you normally would, like gentle squeezes on their arms and legs. This can help give additional deep pressure stimulation that their body may need to help calm them as well. If your child sees an occupational therapist, they may have recommended that you use sensory brushing as part of their daily routine. The bedtime routine after taking a bath would be a good time to do this as well. The suggestions I've made today will not work for everyone. However, I hope I have given you a place to start in your trials if you have a child who has trouble falling or staying asleep. And please, for all of the items that I mentioned today, follow the manufacturer's or your OT's guidelines for use to make sure that your kids are safe to use them. Don't forget to follow me on Instagram at Milestones Podcast, and please send me a message on there to let me know if you're a listener of the show. I am getting more followers every day, but I don't know if any of you are listeners, so please send me a message and just let me know that you've been listening to the podcast. That's all I have for today. Thank you so much for listening.